This is Willard Thompson inviting you to join us once more for a visit behind scenes with the men responsible for educational radio, the men who direct the universities of the air. These are the men who formulate policies, who help to decide what will be heard and when. And our guests today are Mr. Graydon Osmus, manager of station WUOA, the University of Alabama, Mr. Harry Scornia, radio director of Indiana University, and Miss Lucille Ruby, program director of station WLSU, Louisiana State University. Their topic is FM educational stations. Mr. Scornia, with frequency-modulated stations leaving the air in increasing numbers, how is it that you people have such confidence in the future of this type of broadcasting?
Well, personally, I've studied the international frequency situation somewhat, and we find that in various portions of the world there's a frequency shortage if only AM, the present standard system of radio, is used. In Germany, 54 stations are now a building in FM. It is the only answer to the jamming we're getting in attempts to get through the Iron Curtain, for example, and to provide local communities with FM. The same is true of Italy. The same is going to be true in Greece and Turkey and many other areas. In the southern parts of the United States, it's going to be the only answer to interference from Mexican, Cuban, and other stations there. I think that in the southern part of the United States, FM will come first in a very strong way. I don't think that there's any question that FM has passed through a crisis, but I think we in educational radio can be grateful for that crisis, because when a number of FM operators, commercial operators who haven't had confidence in FM, have gone off the air, it's enabled a good many of us commercial broadcasters to secure better equipment for the amount of money we have by buying used equipment than would otherwise have been possible. I do believe that just as everything better eventually wins out, although it always goes through an economic crisis subject to political and patent and other types of pressures, that there is no question in our minds that in another 5 or 10 years, the security of the position of FM will be evident to everyone as much as our own confidence makes it evident to us now.
Perhaps I'd better explain there that those were the words of Mr. Scornia, the radio director from Indiana University. We started off there rather cold. Miss Ruby, do you have much the same opinion in the matter?
Yes, very much the same. We got an FM station rather than AM because we believed in FM at Baton Rouge. In the whole community, we have much more confidence, it seems, in FM because 4 of the local stations have FM outlets, so that we have a greater FM audience there than we find in many communities.
And as for you, Mr. Osmus, your opinions?
In Alabama, as in Indiana, as Harry pointed out, the people demand the best. I think it's a good old American custom. We are never satisfied with that that's mediocre. We acknowledge ourselves to be, may we say, the anointed ones, and only the best thing in every area, the best cars, the best waffle irons, that's for us. One of the reasons, however, that FM is best in the South, perhaps more than in any other area, is that we've wide spaces that AM radio is not covering adequately. In my particular area in West Central Alabama, it's difficult to pick up a clean signal from AM stations other than small local stations, and those do not cover the area. So FM there is the answer. And I'd like to make one more point without elaborating too far in terms of FM, and that is that it is a development that has come from the outside in. Instead of its growing or beginning in the metropolitan areas, it has mushroomed from the outside, from the rural areas. There is where the people can pick up through FM a clean signal. In many areas of the United States, the only clean, uncluttered signal they can get is from FM.
I'd like to add a remark there as evidence of the fact that the industry does recognize FM as the best. The sound on television is FM, and Just as television is growing out from the metropolitan areas, and as Mr. Osmus points out, FM is growing from the grassroots back toward the metropolitan centers, I think that the convergence point will be reached in a few years, so that all sound, whether for television or for radio, will be on FM, with the exception of a few high-powered stations subject to the present decisions which the Federal Communications Commission reaches on whether to continue high-powered present-type stations, AM stations.
Well, that certainly leaves little doubt as to your feelings on the subject, but being in FM radio, doesn't that pose quite some considerable problems from the standpoint of techniques and methods? Miss Ruby, what is your opinion on that matter?
Well, yes, of course, particularly in those communities where you have to build up the FM habit, so to speak, where the people in the community have been accustomed to listening to AM radio. They may have to be persuaded to develop that FM listening habit. I think that most of our problems that are different from those of the AM broadcasters are in terms of the listeners and the available FM sets in the community.
That matter of sets, of course, is a very definitely limiting factor, but that's one that is being cleared up too, is it not?
Yes, and of course, after you, naturally, people aren't going to buy FM receivers until there is an FM station in the community, so that the pioneering station may have some difficulties, of course. We were fortunate in Baton Rouge because there had been a commercial FM station on the air for years before WLSU went on the air. But nevertheless, we had to build our own audience because we were doing a type of programming for the needs that weren't being met, particularly in the field of music, so that we did have to build our audience. But then we had help from the other FM, other stations that had FM stations in other fields, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Osmus, that problem of forming the FM habit, have you found that that's a very definite problem in your case?
I'm afraid it is. People are accustomed to using only one side of their dial. Even those people that do have FM parts to, or an FM attachment to their AM radio, that is the most difficult problem, habit to break down. But we are doing a number of little things which we hope cumulatively will help promote FM. When you introduced me a moment ago and said WUOA, I was inclined to stop you and say, the letters are WUOA-FM. Though our official call letters are WUOA, we never say WUOA. It's a standing rule. When it's written, when it's spoken, we always add the FM in parentheses, but nevertheless, we always use it as a technique for promoting FM. Another, we use FM on the outside of our stationery in big letters, WUOA with big FM on it. We use it in all of our copy that we send to the papers all over the state and everywhere else. We always tie on FM. News releases of all kinds, everything we do, a number of little ways in which we promote FM. Besides, we collect the names of the people who have purchased FM sets from our dealers. We drop them a little card immediately and say, if you'd like us to place your name on our mailing list, we'd be happy to do so. And we send them a copy of our program. I'm sure Dr. Scorny over here has a lot of techniques that he has used or is planning to use in promoting FM, but those are a few certainly that we've found are paying off.
I think that one of the big advantages that educational stations going into FM have had as compared to AM, or what we now know as standard broadcasting stations, is that across the country, all but about three of the educational stations on AM had to go off the air at night from sunrise until sunset. So in order to sell educational FM, we would almost invariably start with the nighttime hours and begin to give competitive fare that is not available on the AM stations. When Jack Benny is on, we can put on serious music. When Bob Hope is on, we can put on serious drama. We have gone on the assumption that there is always a large number of radios turned off. And rather than our going out and competing for the radios turned on, we feel that if we can get across to the people that here, finally, is something new If you want to turn your radio on and will go to the trouble of tuning it to FM, finally, you can get something quite different now in the evening from anything that's been available before.
I believe that quite a number of the FM stations have used sports to promote their audiences, to build their audiences, and to increase the FM listening. Isn't that true?
That was true, certainly, in Baton Rouge. When we first went on the air, most of the set owners were those with the higher-priced sets, and many of them, we found, wanted good music, so we gave it to them. But we weren't reaching we weren't reaching a cross-section of the community until two of the local commercial FM stations started carrying high school sports on FM. Then the sets boomed in sales because there were many people who wanted to get those sports that were not being carried on AM at the time.
Mm-hmm. And then I believe someone mentioned earlier in the afternoon this business of programming to the schools as a factor in building interest in FM sets.
Yes, there had been no programming for in-school listening in the Baton Rouge area at all when we started that programming this year. So as a result of programming for the schools on FM, the schools began to buy FM receivers, naturally. Then the children would go home and tell their parents what they had heard on FM and ask why they didn't have an FM receiver at home. So that was one of our best promotion devices for FM listening in our area.
If I may be permitted to interrupt here a moment, too, in addition to the type of broadcasts to schools that Miss Ruby has just mentioned, there is a great movement now in the United States for each school system to have its own small FM station. And in Indiana, within a radius of about 150 miles, we have either building or on the air between 8 and 10 of these stations. And as the children go on the air, we find that a lot of parents would just as soon hear little Bobby as Big Bob Hope, for example. And it's percolating outward from the children carrying the gospel home to mommy that I'm going to be on the air tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And a great many sets are being sold for that reason. I think that I'd like to say just a word about sports. We plan to carry no sports on our FM station because the AM stations carry those already. And I think you can put everyone can write down in his little black book one of the ideals of all educational broadcasters at meeting here at Illinois. Namely that what we want to do is provide listeners with a choice of programs and that we want to fill out some of the needs and desires of people who haven't found on the air things they've wanted and people who have consequently condemned radio. We hope they'll give radio another chance with the coming of more FM and more educational stations.
Would you like to add anything to that, Miss Ruby?
I think that Harry has stated it very well.
Mr. Osmond.
I think I'd like to say just this, that as educators, we have an additional responsibility of providing the very finest type of whatever type of program we do an outstanding job of it. That, I think, will help build FM radio.
Well, I'm sorry, but time is up. And I do want to thank you for your cooperation, and I'd like to remind our listeners to be with us again next week when we present another in this series of visits behind scenes in educational radio, The Universities of the Air. Our guests today were Miss Lucille Ruby, Program Director of Station WLSU, Louisiana State University, Mr. Harry Scornia, Director of Radio, Indiana University, and Mr. Graydon Osmus, Manager of Station WUOA, the University of Alabama. This was a tape-recorded feature of the University of Illinois Radio Service.